we're looking at just about 4 minutes after 8 o'clock here on Sky 99.5 FM, and we apologize for the fact that there was no major news bulletin at the top of the hour because of technical difficulties over here. But in terms of the news making, that never stops here on the Breakfast Roundtable on Sky 99.5 FM. Welcome to hour number three, and we still have a little time that we can share with Afro Raymond, president of the JCC. And I know that you had a list of what, 19 items.
You took me through 18 of them already.
Okay, so what's number 19 that we missed?
Okay, well, the last item I wanted to say, which is really of importance to colleagues in the industry, mm-hmm. is in fact that what has happened is that the capital, because of the situation the country finds itself in, with the tremendous decline in energy revenue. I mean, Minister Imbert told us that the energy revenue being applied into this budget, I think, is in the order of $9 billion. And the average in the past years has been about $35 billion. So there was a huge gap, pardon me, that had to be filled by what he called exceptional items. And the exceptional items are things that occur in 1 year only. So, for example, there was the funds from the Phoenix Park IPO. There was a plan to dispose of certain Republic Bank shares and some other items along the way. I think the repayment of the TGU generation plant in South and so on. And therefore, exceptional items are being used to supplement the shortfall in terms of the national revenue. Now, the impact of that, pardon me, is that last year, 2015, the current year that just ended, there was a PSIP, which is the capital budget, of about $8.2 billion. And the capital budget going forward is $7 billion, which means that $7 billion is available for new projects. And that is about 15 or 16% less. So for our industry, where our members would rely on contracts to build roads or bridges or schools or housing, it has an impact because there simply is less work on the table. That's a reality. There's going to be about 15 or 16% less work on the table in terms of new contracts coming forward that are funded. In addition, there may well be challenges going forward in terms of members who have monies outstanding, in terms of members who've committed certain projects, executed certain works and have bills inside. There may well be challenges to get those paid because we're looking really, in the overall picture, we're really looking at a very serious series of financial challenges.
Just to stick a pin,
sure,
a couple things.
Jessie.
One, we got the sense from the minister yesterday and also based on what we saw in the budget that there would be an attempt at stimulus of the construction sector. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. They're not going to abandon many of the big projects, which
yes.
means they understand its importance in keeping the economy humming.
Yeah.
One. Two, Mikey Joseph, when he spoke with us on Monday,
yes.
said that even if they can't pay everybody off right now, they at least want to have a conversation where they set up a structured payment
sure.
over a period of time,
sure.
even as they engage them for the ongoing mm-hmm. and any new mm-hmm. work that's going to be coming on the drawing board.
Absolutely. That's a valuable point by Mikey, and that's an important part of the consultations going forward, because as we started off by saying, this is a provisional budget, so we're going forward in the more structured arrangement in February or March of next year because of the limited time that was available to the incoming administration after the national elections. We are mindful of the fact that all of what you just spoke about, Jesse, are manifestations of the limited amount of money available on the table. And one of the things that we would need to see is an improvement in terms of the accountability and the operations of the state-owned enterprises, which of course is flowing out of the public procurement law that we're going to be pushing to have that implemented as quickly as possible. So
I'm not doubting the veracity of the information, but some people are saying a number of construction companies have gone out of business. Is that true?
That is true, yeah. I mean, I don't have an exact number, but that's true. There are people who have not been able to continue.
Because they have not been paid?
Well, sometimes it's that. Sometimes people just have not getting work, you know. But that has happened. I mean, I know people who've had to close shop and go to work for other people and so on and lost their independence. That has happened.
Now, what about the big projects? I know the opposition that was talking about the Coover Children's Hospital, which mm-hmm. has been outfitted with the most modern equipment, but no workers. If they need hundreds of workers, as the case might be, should the government put these things on hold?
As a matter of fact, there's a growing concern that may become the next white elephant after Brian Lara Stadium.
Well, that's a big question. I mean, health is not my my expertise by any means, but I would just say to you, Edison, in to rejoinder with you, that when the Kuva Children's Hospital was announced on the 3rd of March 2012, we wrote to the Prime Minister, and the then Prime Minister, which is Mrs. Kamala Prasad Bisesa, on the 26th of April 2012. And one of the things we said to her, and the main thrust of the letter, was about local content and about the advisability of the Kuva Children's Hospital. And we asked the question, has there been a needs assessment? Do we need this hospital? Given that we have a children's ward at Mount Hope, which is underutilized and so on and so on. Do we actually need to build a whole hospital for children? And we never had a reply to that letter. And I guess at this point, it was a comprehensive letter dealing with a number of concerns about corruption and inadvisable projects. And I guess what we are living through at the moment, what is appearing to us, is that we are living with the consequences of failing to engage with the expressed concerns of a civil society professional group like JCC. And this is one of the things I want to say in closing, that is encouraging to see the new administration, both Dr. Rowley and Minister Imbert, making the point that they would like to focus on a consultative approach, on an approach of engagement with expert groups and special interest groups and the civil society in going forward. So perhaps you could avoid some of the bad experiences of the past that the countries had to pay for.
May we impose on you a bit to answer just a couple calls? Hello, good morning. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning again, Jesse.
Good morning.
Afra, good morning to you.
Good morning.
If the government seems all gung-ho on the road to Toko for the link-up at Tobago.
I heard that, yeah.
If that is the case, and with the obscene liquidity in the banks at this time, wouldn't you say this is a good opportunity for local contractors to get involved in some of the infrastructure that will surely come as a result of that project?
Well, it's an opportunity, but all of these, I agree that some of the ingredients for the opportunity are on the table, in that we have high liquidity and we have contractors who have plant that is perhaps not deployed as fully as it could be. But what we need to look at is whether, how is that going to be funded? Is it going to be funded through a PPP, public-private partnership, in which people impose a toll? Is there enough land in the country to actually have a system of toll roads? In other words, a road that you have to pay to go on, an expressway, and another road that you don't have to pay to go on to take you to the same place between A and B. And I don't think there's really enough space for that physically in terms of that particular corridor going up there. The only condition I would impose on that at this time, I don't know if you're still on the line, is that we would want to have a project of that magnitude subjected to some sort of process of where we can test the feasibility of it and the engineering attributes of it in the same way that we are discussing with respect to the rapid rail or the mass transport proposals. We would want to see that kind of benchmark of how we proceed, you know?
Yes, I hear you.
Yeah.
Okay, but thank you very
okay,
kindly.
Thank you, sir.
Let's see who else is on the line. Good morning, you're on the air.
A blessed day to Jesse, Mr. Carr, and Mr. Rayman. A blessed day to you, sir.
Good day, morning.
We have a toll system in this country. We just pay it on gas. And we don't get proper roads, we don't get proper bridges. And you know what the people ask for, they get. And we have to respect our Prime Minister. He said two things, and I see it come to pass. You know, and I don't like to say it. And I would not say this morning. And, you know, the Prime Minister gave 20 pages.
He gave 20 what? I missed what he
only
said.
When necessary, they would go up with taxes. And, you know, this government just come and push taxes down at everybody's throat. Look at the union. Why did they get a grant of $50 million? Are they bribing them not to talk? Look at how much people getting fired and nobody is saying nothing for these people. And you spend $10 a week. If it's 50,000 people, that is $500,000 a week. Mm-hmm. And why are you giving them that money? Have a blessed day, sir. Mm-hmm.
Thanks okay, very much.
Thank you. I don't have any answer, really. I mean, that those are questions relating to the labor situation, which I'm not briefed to speak on.
Let's see who else is on the line. Hello, good morning. Hello, good morning.
Hello, morning to the panel.
Hi, Dr. Kuva.
Yes, I'm calling from Kuva.
Yes, good morning.
Now, I don't agree with Mr. Afra Raymond when he agrees to tax properties on the same basis, all properties on the same basis as commercial properties. In other words, he mentioned categorically that people have housing allotments, the real estate, they cut them up, They build houses on them and they rent them, and these attract enormous rents. Now, when you're thinking in terms of taxation on dwelling houses, it's got to be different from that taxation on commercial properties. These houses can be considered as commercial properties and will have to be assessed as such. Now, I know as a fact that the government, the revenue division, the valuation division,
yes,
have been engaged in a revaluation process. Mm-hmm. To revalue properties for the purpose of taxation, as we commonly say, the property tax.
Correct.
But, and they have not been successful so far over the 5 years, so that means the formula is bad. A more feasible approach to it is to take the figures from the assessment rolls or the tax registers in the revenue offices, mm-hmm, and tax them at a percentage. For instance, 25% or 12.5%, as the case may be. And in the case of the old tenancies, mm-hmm, these war garden tenancies in,
yes,
the rural areas,
yeah, yeah,
these have to be drastically be revived. Fact is that some of these properties are taxed at $2.40,
yes,
per acre.
Per acre, yeah, yeah.
They have to be
it's
revived.
A historic rate, yes. Yeah. It's an old style rate, yeah.
Yes, old style rate, mm-hmm, war gardens, mm-hmm, rate, warden assessment in,
yep,
those
warden,
days.
Warden office, yeah.
And in the question of the Mrs. Bissessa's mm-hmm, baby about land for the landless and Mr.
Yes.
Mungal,
yes, yes.
That has to be reviewed
drastically
by Ian Fletcher and his boys. They,
yeah,
are quite competent officers.
I'm not sure Mr. Fletcher is there anymore. I think he may have retired by now.
Well, then we have Steve Edwards.
But I'm not sure who the person is. I know we have the new minister, Rambarad. But in fact, that is Land for the Landless comes under Land Settlement Agency, doesn't it?
Yes, but then the Commissioner of State Lands and his,
yes,
staff,
quite so. Quite so. That's part of their office, official responsibilities. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
to administer, mm-hmm, all lands. And, mm-hmm, they are competent people I left behind.
Yes.
Fact is that you have Steve Edwards, mm-hmm, a graduate of UWE. All these boys are quite capable. We've,
yes,
got Jaglal,
yes,
we've got Steve, these young boys down at San Fernando, and we've got,
yeah,
lots of them.
Yes.
And we've got new junior officers, patrolmen. The exercise is quite a massive exercise.
Right, right.
And I'll tell you something too, Mr. Raymond.
Yes.
Now, when the taxes have been waived for 5 years,
mm-hmm,
that means that these properties were not registered.
Absolutely.
So all this has to be done. You've got to have staff to go out on the field,
yeah,
and to do enumerations on these new properties.
Yeah.
Because as they are, we don't know whether they exist yet.
Well,
or no.
I was,
yes,
going to come,
no,
to that point, because one of the points, I mean, you and I, we're having a little discourse here on property tax, but one of the points is interesting, because in your earlier part of your remarks, you referred to the assessment rules.
Yes.
But one of the things that's interesting is that in 2009, when Mr. Manning's administration tabled the property tax proposals, it was disclosed at that time, and I was doing some research and some writing at that time, but it was disclosed from the official debate and so on, that I think the figure is in about the order of about 250,000 properties in this country, that is built properties,
yes,
land with buildings on them,
uh-huh,
were not part of the assessment rolls.
Well,
so the assessment rolls themselves are so historic and out of date that instrument, that record itself needs to be updated before we can get a true picture of what's on the table and what it is available for taxing and on what basis. Just to clarify, I wasn't one little point. I wasn't actually suggesting that property tax be levied on the same basis on commercial and residential property. Just to be clear, what it is I was saying. Maybe there was a misunderstanding.
All right, sir, I hear you.
Okay.
But you have to take into consideration these conditions. The
sure.
lady from Digo Martin yesterday,
yes,
had mentioned certain fears that, mm-hmm, she's encountering.
Yes,
and it is important that we take these, because the entire population,
mm-hmm,
this is their fear, that properties will be taxed out of proportion. And on the basis of these unregistered properties in the assessment roll,
mm-hmm,
Mr. Imbert has promised new staff, and the OJTs,
yes,
would be very well served,
yeah,
for that purpose.
Mm. Yes, yes.
Thank you, Dr. Kuva.
All right, that's all for
Thanks
now.
Thanks very much.
Hello, good morning. You're on the Breakfast Roundtable.
Good morning.
Hello, Mr. Princess Down.
I don't want to belabor the property tax thing, but I'll just plug a few holes there. I want to agree with Mr. Raymond that you have really about 200,000 or more properties off the road.
Yep.
Those are particularly, those are maybe over 95% would be in regional corporations as opposed to municipal corporations. You would have Arima, Port of Spain, San Fernando, and Point Fortin having fairly up-to-date assessments.
Yes.
And they, in fact, had used the new formula, and the lady from Digo Martin, she was partially correct when she said that they were using the annual rentable value, but she was incorrect when she said that you would pay 100%.
No.
Now, I stand to be corrected, you know, but I think it was about 15 or 12, or San Fernando was paying 10%.
Yeah, 10 and 12 and a half and so on.
Yeah. And I think Point Fortin was paying 9% or 8% or something like that.
Yeah.
So you could easily calculate what you rent in a place for, what you feel you rent it for,
yes,
and do the annual value, and then do maybe a 9% and say that might be a property tax.
Yeah, and, estimate,
and that would, and that would have been what the new one would have been. You
yes,
know?
But
all in all, I tend to agree with you that in a modern society, we need to have this in place. I tell you what is one of the negatives that I think would surface. A lot of land deals would have gone through illegally in the absence of this updated record.
The database,
Own what and who
exactly.
Own what and who. Yeah, and we see a lot of misdemeanors having been conducted over the last
time. I think some of them might even be felonies, but we'll see.
Thank you, Mr. Princestown. Just this is an issue that came up when we had the discussion about property tax all those years ago. The fact that at the very mention of this tax coming, before it even happened, landlords across the country rose rents on their renters and never took them down when the tax was axed. So people continue to pay increasingly higher rents over the last how many years, even though there was no justification for the rents being increased. Yeah. And there is also that concern we would see a resurgence of that again this time around.
Well, my response to you, Jesse, I have no doubt from my own experience professionally that that did take place. But my response to you is that I think some people brought them down. But my response to you in relation to the question of rental and the reasonableness of rental levels is that we have in law a system of rent control boards that effectively was allowed to wither on the vine because boards weren't reappointed and so on. And if we are going to be doing a fundamental review of some of these policies, we talked about a land review earlier on. One of the issues that I think would need to be reviewed is the housing policy. The housing allocations are down from where they were last year in terms of the Ministry of Housing Construction. But we also need to look at the housing policy in terms of what is the housing policy for? And in fact, whether building is the only way to provide a solution to the country's housing needs. One of the ways to provide an ease to people in respect of housing is in respect of effective rent control. And we need to examine what is the role of rent control in housing solutions to our country. Those questions need to come up for some sort of serious consideration because it was there before, it was allowed to lapse, and therefore we had a loophole created where that sort of increase could have taken place without any official control.
And also looking at what could be happening in the real estate market overall with the introduction of these new taxes. I mean, what could that mean for people wanting to buy and sell properties, as it were? Is it going to cause it, you know, will it have an inflationary effect on real estate prices?
I don't think so. I think that the real estate market, as it is, has certain controls, and one of them is that people have, and by controls, I don't mean official controls or laws. I'm just speaking about the role of the market and so on, in that there are limits to what people will and won't pay. We've seen significant shifts in the market. For instance, we've seen a tremendous increase in the population of Chaguanas and its hinterland because the land prices down there were reasonable enough that private sector developers, not the HDC, private sector developers could buy substantial lands and build substantial housing. And a lot of people who live down there now are people who traditionally resided in the East-West Corridor but could no longer afford housing in Digo Martin or Tunapuna or those areas and have found themselves living in Chaguanas and its hinterland. So the market has adjusted in its own way over the last 10 to 15 years to reflect how the land prices operate and the availability of planning permission and cheaper land in Central has led to a whole different population living there. And we will see those changes rolling forward.
As you talk about the East-West Corridor, one of the things the finance minister pointed to is a desire to revitalize towns and cities across the country. I'm not sure how that's going to work, it definitely is on the agenda.
That is something that was mentioned as part of the minister's, I would call it a wish list in terms of things that he would like to see. It's something that we would support because certainly with respect to the capital city, it is striking. The capital city appears to be two or three things side by side. So we had in the previous PNM administration, we had Prime Minister Manning and his ambitious project to rebuild half of the capital city, all of which was called the Heart and Unicot and so on. Half of the capital city was rebuilt. And at the same time, we had some of the architectural icons from years past, generations past, falling into decrepitude, whether it was Millefleur or the Stolmeyer Castle.
I thought it was quite cool to take down Millefleur. Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that there was a kind of a discord in terms of how the capital was developed, and certainly just in returns of Magnificent Seven or the building here in Frederick Street, the church that was the Grey Friars and so on, there are real issues to be grappled with in terms of preserving our architectural heritage. And it's striking when you visit other parts of the Caribbean how they have, with less resources than us, less money than us, how they have preserved their historic buildings of icons. I mean, yes, those buildings may have been put up in times of colonialism and so on and so on, but the buildings have been preserved, and quite nicely so. And that is something that it will be very welcome to see that being engaged with. So we would welcome that kind of approach to also the conservation of the architectural icons as opposed to merely new project after new project.
Alpha Raymond, thank you for giving us some extra time and penalty kicks this morning.
Well, I don't count them as kicks. It was my pleasure. Thank you very much.
JCC President Alpha Raymond joining us this morning in studio on the Breakfast Round Table. Up next, we've got environmentalist Stephen Broadbridge talking about some of the environmental issues facing the Rowley administration, and also putting his 25 cents worth on the hunting season fracas. Stay with us here on Sky.
Don't touch a button. We'll be right back with more on Sky 99.5 FM.
Since our inception,